Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Weekly Highlight Podcast. As our in-season series continue, we have learned more and more about how to develop players as leaders, use technology better, practice more efficiently, and more. Beginning this week was Brian Kite, forging on our Leadership Journey series discussing burnout for coaches. Here, Kite details how directing your energy into specific things can benefit you during the season.
And don't misinterpret Bill Belichick, zero waste of energy from what you see at his press conferences. The emotionless robot. Like, first of all, that's not Bill Belichick. That's the guy he chooses to be in front of the media because the media does not deserve any of his energy. Just so you're all clear, that's not Bill Belichick. That is strategic portrayal by Bill Belichick of a guy who has to do that stuff, because here's what Bill Belichick has understood and calculated. What is all media for him and his team? What is all of it? Wasted energy. It's all wasted energy. Now, Tom Brady hasn't made that exact same decision personally, and that's okay. That's fine. But Bill Belichick has decided organizationally, media is wasted energy. So when you see him up front, guess what he puts into it? Zero. Because he wants his energy reserved for stuff that matters to him. Now switch to a college program. Is that what I advise Bill Belichick approach of wasted energy to media in a college program? Well, probably not. Nick Saban chooses a close approach to that, but occasionally he'll put some energy into it. But he puts energy into the media when? And he's on the record for this. He puts energy into the media to talk to who? When he talks to the media with those things he goes off on, who's he talking to?
I mean, I think a lot of it's for recruiting.
For recruiting, and then it's for his players. So when he puts energy in, he makes sure any energy he puts into media has a purpose, and that purpose is for getting a message across to the locker room or something like that. Whereas if you're at a different program, say Georgia Tech, pouring a ton of energy into media, a ton. Why? Well, because they're trying to shift the narrative, display a culture, create more attraction, doing a bunch of stuff in recruiting. They're trying to change a brand. And so now that all serves a purpose, but they're not doing it from a place of resentfulness. They're doing it from a place of strategy. So the point is, you have to do your work. You have to make your decisions. You have to decide where your energy is going. And every time you put energy into something, energy's got to either stay away or come from some other spot.
For Tuesday's show, Rob Everett stopped by once again, telling us different ways to film practice and how to use it. Next, our hosts Keith Grabowski and Everett share their thoughts on letting staff take over the duties of filming and avoiding micromanaging.
So I learned enough about the technology to teach, thinking of this as student assistant at the time, to be able to use it. And then, you know, from there, he actually became like the expert at the technology. I let him do it. I empowered him to, this is going to be your thing, Pete. This is your thing. What can we do to get better with this? And I left it there. And, you know, he took that to heart as, wow, I have an opportunity to really own this and help make the team better. And, you know, it was like, hey, coach, what if we filmed up this period? Or, you know, this drill would be really good for the guys to see. What if I stood over here for this particular period? Like, all right, let's do it. You know, allow somebody to take the ownership, and you don't have to micromanage. And I think, you know, I was talking with Brian Kite on the podcast earlier in this week, that feeling of having to do it all is actually probably a sign of not being the best leader you can be, right? If you're a good leader, you're going to be able to delegate things, and people are going to be able to probably do a heck of a lot more than you can trying to keep your hands on everything.
Yeah, and be secure in the fact that you've trained your people up right. And giving people ownership over things, even if it's small, will really kind of give you an idea of the things that they could handle later on. I was talking to a coach this morning about a new offensive coordinator, and is going through some growing pains in that. And we kind of talked about, you know, you wish, you know, he would have had the opportunity to see this person in a somewhat leadership role or decision-making role that wasn't you know, his coordinator, because then you can see people's strengths and weaknesses and make some educated decisions on, yeah, I want to give this guy the next step, because, you know, he's a good coach, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be a good play caller or a good leader of one side of the ball. So, you know, you can find out a lot about people, about how they take tasks. And as a head coach or someone who's in a position to delegate, you know, be secure in that you've trained people up right. They're on your staff for a reason. Let's see what they can do when you kick them out of the nest a little bit.
Our Trends Day series continues to progress with former NFL coach Charlie Coyner and content coordinator for USA Football, Zach Dunn. In this clip, Coyner and Grabowski discuss the return of the fullback in the NFL.
The San Francisco 49ers showed that the fullback is alive and well in football, and we've been talking about that more under center, even I formation type sets, where we're starting to see, you know, the fullback, call them the fullback, H-back, guys are using them in different ways, become more involved in this. But also what we're seeing, you know, we've seen a lot of that outside zone play that I love. But, you know, along with that first play from scrimmage, the 49ers against the Browns was basically an outside zone counterplay, right, where they wrapped it back and those guys, you know, they showed outside zone. It looked like outside zone from the start, and everybody, you know, was fighting to not get reached, and they even probably went to the wrong linebacker inside, but that guy had already moved far enough that he was out of the play, and really then they just had two guys left on the backside to take care of. One was with, they ran it away from the backside tight end, and the other was the fullback wrapping back as well and making a big block there.
No doubt. I mean, it's a wonder that the Browns linebacker didn't call timeout, and that's what that was. That, you know, they're cheating. They got two guys back there, and one of them looks like he's a big blocking guy. So, yeah, you just don't see it very much. But, heck, it showed up on that play big time for San Francisco. And then I'm watching Kansas play Oklahoma, and that turned out to be a lopsided affair. But for, you know, Les Miles, he's not going to abandon some of that. He's got a fullback back there, and they turned around and tossed one to their tailback about 8 or 9 yards deep. He paused, and I really went back and looked at it, and I think that there was some power action to the offense's left. The tailback just kind of paused right there, and then he cut it to the right. But just because the fullback was in there and they run him a couple times, everybody was screaming down. He was that fullback, ended up being a 60 yard run. And shoot, Keith, you and I are, me especially, but you know, you're getting there, I guess. But we're getting old enough where when you get old enough, you start seeing things cycle.
Right.
And, you know, if everybody's going to be out there defending 53 and a third, and they better right now, there's going to be somebody that goes, you know what? They go put their arm around that big old kid that really wants to get the ball more, but he's not. So he's either a tight end or a linebacker or a fullback type. And they're going to go, hey, buddy, I got a job that you can fill in for 10 plays, you know, be a big deal for us. So as long as they let you put one back there, there could be somebody that does it.
Former Penn State linebacker and current senior manager in education and training at USA Football, Andy Ryland, came back to us for the deliberate practice series on Thursday. Here, Ryland shares some ideas of how to rethink drills.
If we're to look at kind of those baseline introductory beginning of the day drills that coaches would normally do with linebackers, you know, you have some sort of lateral shuffling, downhill shuffling, you know, whatever your footwork series is. And it's super common to see three linebackers out at a time. And again, we assume it's because there's three backers on the field. But you may look at things a little bit differently, that if you have a player that's struggling with something and you really want to critique maybe some of the technical details, is three players going at the same time the best way to do it? If you're doing the drill simply as a position-specific warm-up, kind of greasing the groove, getting that lateral shuffle, that downhill action, getting those guys moving in position-specific manners as opposed to the general warm-up, and you're 6-7 weeks into the season, couldn't you go 5-6 at a time? I mean, aren't the guys just using it as a movement preparation tool? Do they really need to be in groups of three, or can we move to larger groups? And the second example I thought of is, you know, you traditionally see our defensive backs and they're doing their back pedal drills and they're doing their you know, open up their hips and then swerve and then turn and run, and they're doing all that stuff. And if you were to look at the numbers, and this is for any coach, look at the numbers in which you traditionally do that drill. Do you have two guys going at a time, three guys going at a time, or four guys going at a time? And then ask yourself the question, well, why those numbers? Are you doing those numbers because you want to be able to see everyone and provide good technical feedback? Well, is that the goal of the session at this point of the year? Are you doing it because you're trying to have a general warm-up and you're trying to recreate the work-to-rest ratios of a traditional football play based on how big your defensive back group is this year? Or maybe that's the reason. Or maybe it changes day-to-day, week-to-week, block-to-block in your season based on, hey, in preseason, we're going to have smaller groups and we're really going to try to get eyes on. But as we go through the season, couldn't some of those drills we can start opening up and doing more people at once just because we're doing it for the purpose of kind of getting the guys moving and greasing the groove? Now, I think you run into some different things where it's, are we teaching something new? Is this an old skill we're just reviewing? Do I, as the coach, have to have my eyes on each and every player? Do we trust players to police themselves? Are there other assistant coaches we can use to split into smaller groups? And you start to go through this process in your head, and all of a sudden you realize that doing it with two defensive backs or three linebackers might not be the best way to do it, especially for your goal at this point in the season.
Wide receiver expert Drew Lieberman detailed how to save your receiver's legs during the season for our show on Friday. Next, Lieberman will explain several components of ball drills he uses with his players.
You can never really catch too many footballs. So like a big kind of leg saver thing I'll do, like in the preseason during special teams period, stuff when I have some free time with them, we'll run routes, we'll do full speed releases. Like we'll be pretty heavy on our legs. Now when we get that free time, we just do ball drills. And with ball drills, just trying to create like uncomfortable environments for them to catch the ball in. So we never just play catch, but the one that I love is like the lying down ball drill where the kid's just lying on his back and you got either a teammate or me kind of walking around him in a circle and just throwing the ball at him from different angles while he's on his back. But that's like a really, you know, it's an uncomfortable environment to catch the ball from, which then translates into making tough catches in the game. So we get pretty creative with the ball drills we do that are all stationary this time of year. But like I said, I think the most important thing in this discussion is in my opinion, is not so much like you have to be smart about what you do, but it's not so much doing less, because you got to do the work to get better and keep progressing. It's just making sure you're recovering like professionals and like adults and not being immature about that part of the process.
Yeah, I've seen your ball drill before, and I really like that one. When you're doing that one, you know, why do you feel it's so good? Especially because you're not standing in one spot, you are moving around. To you, what is that simulating as far as the catch and what, you know, the coaching points especially are for that guy who is laying on his back catching a football?
Yeah, it's just forcing you, like, your eye to see the ball from awkward angles. And I think, like, when you 99% of the time you drop the ball with your eyes because you don't have great eye discipline. And this drill, like, you know, you only get, like, a lot of times when I'm throwing it from directly behind you and you're looking over the shoulder, you only have a split second to see the football and to find the football. So, like, it forces you to track the ball in that split second. If your hand placement is poor, if you're keeping your hands near your chest or keeping your hands low, you're going to drop the ball. So it's a drill that just forces you to be really disciplined with your eyes from all these awkward angles, and it forces you to be aggressive with your hand, which are two things that I preach the most. And yeah, it was just like the way I kind of fell in love with it was just kind of the process. Like my first year coaching, I did that drill a lot. It was like one of the go-to ball drills I had, and I just saw kids make so much progress under it, especially with the over-the-shoulder catches. It really, really, really helps with the over-the-shoulder catches. But just, you know, I believe in every ball drill. Like I remember that I got the tight end coach for the Cowboys back in the day. I can't remember his name, an older guy. He used to like splash water in Jason Witten's face as he caught the ball. And I'm all for stuff like that. Like I'm just all for like make it like create some environment that makes it hard for you to focus on the ball, so you're focusing on everything else, but you still have to maintain proper discipline, proper mechanics. Like that's how I think you improve your hands, not by catching 100 balls off of jugs that hit the same spot over and over and over. Like that's not what it's like. So just try to create chaos and create things that'll make them uncomfortable.
Thanks for listening to the Coaching Coordinator podcast this week. If you're a fan of the show, please make sure to follow us on our Twitter account for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Read our show notes, analysis, and coaching articles at blogs.usafootball.com and check out our systems for blocking, tackling, and defeating blocks at footballdevelopment.com. Finally, subscribe to us on SoundCloud, Google Play, and Spotify, as well as give us a 5-star review on iTunes. As always, Be sure to check back next week for more one-of-a-kind content.